Horrible Histories, The Smashing Saxons, read by Vienna Vance, by Terry Geary and Martin Brown. The Smashing Saxons. Introduction for George Barron with X. History can be horrible, especially those history lessons where the teacher asks impossible questions. You know the sort of thing? After the Romans came invaders from Saxony, the Saxons. You myrtle Mabelwick. Me, sir? What, sir? Why were they called Saxons? Because they said they were all sons of Mr. and Mrs. Sack? I think I'll become a P.E. teacher, or an undertaker. You get to meet more intelligent people if you're an undertaker. Forget all the confusing stuff teachers try to tell you. Angles from Angolan moved into the north end of Linz, while Saxons from Saxony moved into the south. Angles? Is this history or math? Saxon was the name the Welsh, the Scots, and the Irish called all the strangers who moved into England when the Romans left. Just tell your teacher. It was never that simple. Let's just use the word Saxon the way they meant it. Saxons were the people who invaded the place we now call England. And don't worry, there's an escape from the terrible tortures of teachers asking questions. It's time for people power and for biting back. Now, with the help of a horrible histories book, you can turn the tables on teachers. Now you can ask questions. Please, sir, why would a Saxon warrior wear a pig on his head? Or, to show you his bit of a bear? Bear, get it? You don't know the answer, do you, sir? Maybe it's time I retired. Knowledge is power, see? Now you can find out fascinating facts, like what a whip made from the skin of a dolphin would be used for, and then test your teacher. By the time you've finished, the teacher may need that whip. Why? Read on. Timeline. 410. After 300 years, the Romans and Britain go back to Rome. The Brits have to fight off powerful Picts, savage Scots, and invading Irish raiders. Cheerio! 439. The Brits hire a couple of bothersome Saxon brothers from Jutland, Hengist and Thursa, to fight for them. H&H like it so much they decided to stay. Batter the Brits and settle. There's gratitude for you. Brit bothering brothers. Done battering. 460s. The Brits fight back against the Saxons under a leader called Ambrosius. And about 20 years later, a warrior called Arthur takes over. That's not the legendary bloke with the round table. This King Arthur was probably the last great Roman-British leader. Saxon Aelus Axenfeller. 491. The Saxon leader, Ella, becomes the first ruler of the South Saxon kingdom. He attacks British defenders at the old Roman fortress in Pevensey and massacres the lot of them. 511. Brit hero King Arthur dies, probably at the Battle of Camlann. The Brits will struggle hopelessly now he's gone. 597. Christian missionaries arrive from Rome and Saxons are converted mostly. Some go back to being pagans later. Maybe it's more fun. Is he dead? Probably. 600. The Saxons gradually take over the land we now call England, with the Northumbrian kingdom in the north, the Mercians in the middle, the Anglians in the east, and the kingdom of Wessex in the south. Very neat, very cozy. 787. Mercian leader King Offa is so powerful he can organize the digging of a 20-meter-wide ditch between England and Wales, 169 miles long, to keep the wild Welsh away. His ditch is known as Offa's Dyke. King Offa was special, so he was sort of a special Offa. 793. The Vikings are coming from Norway. Bad news for savage Saxons and massacred monks. These are just raids. Later they'll be back to stay. It's not goodbye, it's only au revoir. 871. Alfred the Great becomes King of Wessex and defeats and drives back the vicious Vikings from the south of England. But they don't go home. They stay in the north and the east. Alfred may be great, but he hasn't vanquished the Vikings, really. I knew him when he was only Alfred the Fairly Good. 924. Alf's grandson, Athelstan, avoids a plot to blind him and becomes king. He's a real great, even though he's usually forgotten. He's the man to sort out the Vikings, not to mention the Welsh and the Scots. Wessex are winners! Britain is a single Saxon country for the first time, but not for long. Alf is my great-grandfather, get it? 937. The Welsh, Scots, Irish, and Vikings all gang up to rebel and destroy Athelstan. He and his Saxons beat them in a bloody battle at Brunanburh, probably in Yorkshire. 939. Athelstan dies. Guess what? The Vikings are back led by Olaf Guthfridsson, who takes over as king in the north. He means trouble. Funny name, Guthfridsson. What does it mean? Trouble. 978. Saxon King Edward the Martyr is murdered. Ethelred the Unready, his stepbrother, takes the crown. But did Eth have something to do with the death? Eth tries to pay the Vikings to go away, giving them gold weighing 10,000 kilos in 991, so they keep coming back. Who can blame them? Your king. What now? Hang on, I'll be on in a minute. 1002. King Ethelred organizes a massacre of the Viking settlers. the women and children and the defenseless farmers because they don't fight back, but the Vikings are yours will avenge them. We need less gold or bigger boats. 1012. Now Peril Death gives the greedy Vikings 20,000 kilos of gold to go away. It does them, and the English, no good, because I'm swearing you ain't staying. 1013. Ethelred is driven off the throne and replaced by invading Viking Sweyn. Eth runs off to Normandy till Sweyn dies. Eth tries a bit of a comeback, but then Sweyn's son Knut returns and sees him off. I'm Knut, and you can scoot. 1032. Edward the Confessor becomes king. He gets a bit too friendly with the Normans. 1066. And that's that. Last Saxon King Harold is defeated by William the Conqueror and his Normans. I'm Bill, I've won, you're nil. The Saxons start, battering the Brits. Have you ever noticed how school books tell you things, but they never seem to answer the questions you want to ask? But this is a horrible history book, so now's your chance to quiz the author. Well, what are you waiting for? Who were these Saxon people? Well, they came from North Germany and invaded Britain from about AD 300 onwards. They liked it so much they stayed. So what was wrong with North Germany then? A lot of them lived on little islands surrounded by marsh or sea. Terrible farming land, so they went off and pinched someone else's. Did no one try to stop them? Of course they did. The Romans who ran Britain stopped them. Then, when the Romans left, the Brits tried to stop them. But the Saxons won. They drove the Brits west into Wales and Cornwall. Then the Vikings came across and tried to push the Saxons out. Serves them right, so why isn't England called Saxon land? Just one of those things. It was the Welsh and the Scots and the Irish who called them Saxons. By about 800, the Saxons were calling themselves Anglesk. Their spelling wasn't as good as yours. Okay, where did the Saxons go? Nowhere. They stayed in Britain. But in 1066, the Normans came across and took control. The Normans became the rulers and the Saxons became the peasants. Today's British people are a mixture of Saxon and Norman and lots of others. So what kind of people were these Saxons? That would take a whole book to answer. Books are boring. Horrible histories aren't. So where can I find a horrible history of the Saxons? You're reading it, stupid. Oh, so I am. Thorvald Hengist. In the 420s, the Brits were led by Vortigern. Here, I say, you chaps, that wasn't my name, you know. Vortigern was my title, and it means Great King. Jolly good title, too. Vortigern led the Brits from about AD 425 till 450. He organized the Brits after the Roman armies left, and his real name may have been Vitellinus, which sounds a bit like a medicine. But Vortigern had problems, too, as we know from a horrible history written by a priest and historian called Gildas, who was writing almost 100 years after Vortigern ruled. The feathered flight of a rumor reached the ears of everyone in South Britain. Their old enemies from the north were on their way. They weren't coming to raid, but to rule the country from end to end. But before they could defend themselves, they rushed down that wide road that leads to death. A deadly plague killed so many and so quickly that there weren't enough left alive to bury the dead. What did the Brits do when peppered by plague and picks? Panic! Those picked ruffians are coming and there aren't enough Brit boys left to fight them off. Picks are terrible people. They'll kill you, or worse, make you eat haggis. Yuck! Death or haggis, take your pick. Definitely death. So what did Vortigern do? Gildas said Vortigern's council went blind. What he meant was they couldn't see how stupid their actions were. A council was held to decide the best way of dealing with the brutal invasions and bloody raids. All the members of the council and the great king were struck blind. To hold back the northern enemies, they brought to the island the vile, unspeakable Saxons led by brothers Hengist and Hursa. These Saxons are hated by God and humans alike. Nothing more frightful has happened to this island, nothing more bitter. To get the feeling that Gildas didn't like the Saxons, he went on to curse Vortigern and the council. What utter blindness of their wits. What raw, hopeless stupidity. Sounds a bit like my teacher when he read my history homework. Anyway, Vortigern paid the warrior bullies Hengist and Hursa to fight for him, and the boys done well. But then the Saxon visitors turned nasty and demanded a lump of Brit land for themselves. 100 years later, Gildas was still furious at Vortigern's stupidity. Vortigern's council invited an enemy under their own roof that they feared northern death. These Saxons fixed their claws on the eastern coast, as if they planned to defend it. When they were settled, they invited friends to join them. For a long time, the Britons gave them supplies to shut the dogs' mouth. But the Saxon dogs were hungry. The more they got, the more they wanted, and they were ready to fight for it. Vortigern's plan worked for a little while, and the Picts and Irish were held back. The Kentish Chronicle history makes it sound pathetic. The Saxon barbarians grew in number. They demanded the food and clothing that Vortigern promised, but the Britons said, "We cannot feed and clothe you, for your numbers are grown. Go away, for we do not need your help." Imagine being in the Brit's position. You ask the school bully to help you. He turns on you and demands your school dinner money. And you say, "Go away, for I do not need your help." Think it would work? Ha, no way. And it didn't work for the Britons. But then another Roman Briton called Ambrosius rebelled against Vortigern. Who did Vortigern turn to for help to fight Ambrosius? My brave Saxon chums, of course. Naturally, old Hengist told only he didn't have enough fighting fellows to battle against all of Ambrosius' awful men. He wanted to fetch another 20 boatloads of his Saxon mates across. Hengist didn't just bring the barbarians, he brought a secret weapon, his daughter. The old historian describes what happened next. In one of the ships was Hengist's daughter, a very beautiful girl. Hengist arranged a feast for Vortigern and his soldiers. They got very drunk, and the devil entered into Vortigern's heart, making him fall in love with the girl. He asked Hengist for her hand in marriage and said, "I will give anything you want in return, even half my kingdom." Of course, it wasn't Vortigern's kingdom to give away. The land belonged to the dukes who ruled each county. But Vortigern gave Hengist the county of Kent, without even asking the Kent lord, Gwyrgwyn. In around AD 339, from his new base in Kent, Hengist was ready to take over Britain, and he didn't care how much blood was spilled. Gilda said all the great towns fell to the Saxon battering rams. Bishops, priests, and people were all chopped down together while swords flashed and flames crackled. It was terrible to see the stones of towers thrown down to mix with pieces of human bodies. Broken altars were covered with a purple crust of clotted blood. There was no burial except under ruins, and bodies were eaten by the birds and beasts. Horrible history, but a bit over the top. Modern historians don't think the Saxon Rebellion was all that bloody and violent. Anyway, the Brits fought back. I sent my own son, Vortimer, off to fight old Hengist, you know. He whipped the Saxons like dogs and killed old Hengist's brother, Hursa. I think the savage Saxons got my message. You don't mess with Vortigern. Then young Vortimer was killed. The Saxons came back with a really vile, unspeakable plot. If Vortigern had left a diary, it might have looked something like this. August 23rd, St. Bartholomew's Day, A.D. 356. Oh dear, oh dear, oh dear, oh dear, oh dear, oh dear. Those frightfully nice Saxon chappies have turned out to be simply, well, frightful. It was bad enough they're killing poor little Vortimer, but now they've turned nasty. That Hengist bloke, who smells a little, to be honest, invited us over to talk about peace, and one thought it was a jolly good idea, don't you know? After all, I'm married to his lovely daughter, so he wouldn't harm me. Bring along your top generals. No weapons, though, he said. We'll have a bit of a party. Some ale, a few nibbles, and a jolly sing-song. It sounded just like the good old days when the Saxon blokes first came over. In fact, it all sounded jolly jolly. When would you like us to come over, one asked. St. Bartholomew's Eve, 7:30 for 8, he said. Topping, one replied. See you then, old boy. Oh dear, oh dear. The clue is there, wasn't it? St. Bartholomew was that missionary chappie who went to Africa to convert the pagans. They skinned him alive and chopped his head off. So one ought to have guessed that it wasn't a good evening to meet the jolly old pagan enemy. Sure enough, I arrived with all the top chaps in Britain, my best warriors, best ministers, and the best bishops. What did the savage Saxons do? Why, they sat us down at the tables, waited till we were munching on the jolly old nibbles, and then Hengist cried out, "Saxons, draw your knives!" They jolly well drew their dirty, great knives that they'd hidden in their boots. Not very stirring. In fact, it's cheating, don't you think? Chop, chop, chop. It was over in seconds. Well, actually, we didn't have any seconds. They killed the chops while they were eating their firsts. Blood all over the tables. Blood all over the rushes on the floor. Someone's going to have a sticky, messy job cleaning that up one can jolly well tell you. The only one they left alive was me. One has to go back and tell the British chaps that Hengist rules okay. Since one has lost all one's top chappies, one doesn't have a lot of choice, does one? I'm a prisoner, and I had to give horrible Hengist quite a lot of land just to spare my life. Oh dear, oh dear, oh dear. Oh dear, oh dear, oh dear. What happened to Vortigern? He survived, but was hated by everyone. In the end, Vortigern wandered from place to place till his heart broke and he died without honor. Gildas the writer was trying to explain what a dreadful place Britain was and how it had been better in the good old Roman days. Maybe he made the Saxon Rebellion sound worse than it was. Archaeologists have dug on a lot of Saxon and British sites, and they can't find much proof that this violent rebellion ever happened. But, violent or peaceful, the Saxons had arrived and they meant to stay. Superstitious Saxons. The Dark Ages are a bit of a mystery to us. That's why they got their name. But they were also really dark. After the sunset, there were no streetlights to show the way. Only moonlight, starlight, and some whacking great scary shadows. So it's no wonder the Saxons believed all sorts of weird and horrible things went on in those shadows. Devils and demons lurked there, ready to snatch your soul and carry it off to hell. Even though I say it myself, if there's one thing I do rather well, it's lurk. You believed in charms and spells to protect you. You became superstitious, especially about how you buried your dead. Dead losses. In the early days, before they became Christian, the Saxons would sometimes bury a servant with his or her dead master. The servant would then be able to serve the master in the afterlife. But the horrible historical fact is the servant was often buried alive. They were thrown into the open grave. A heavy stone may have been thrown on top to keep them down, and then they were covered with soil. If it wasn't a servant, then it was some poor woman, buried alive to keep the man company in the afterlife, cook his dinner, wash his clothes, and polish his sword. It seems that even in the afterlife, men were hopeless. Even dogs were sacrificed to go with their masters to the afterlife. What would dogs do there? Are there any trees for peas in heaven? The Saxons brought a lot of their funeral habits with them from Europe. Then in AD 597, St. Augustine arrived in southern England to convert the Saxons to Christianity. When the Saxons became Christian, it was a mixture of old customs and new ones, and some customs you wouldn't want to happen to your worst enemy or even your history teacher. A pain in the ash. Saxons were worried about the ghosts of the dead coming back to haunt them. Would you worry about your dead Auntie Ethelberga coming back to haunt you? Then here are a few helpful early Saxon hints. 1. Cremate her. When early Saxons cremated a dead friend, they would place the ashes in a small jar or urn. Then they would leave a small window in the jar. Why? So the spirit could come and go and not make trouble if it found its ashes trapped in a sealed container. Mind you, windows do have their disadvantages. I can see you. 2. Cut her head off. The living dead find it a bit hard to haunt without a head. They wouldn't even find their way out of the burial yard. So lop off their dead head and save yourself from a haunting. Oops, sorry. Excuse me. Bump. Boop. Pardon. Sorry. Trip. 3. Give her some company. Sometimes there were the ashes of more than one person in a pot. Auntie Ethelberga will be so busy gossiping to her powder pal that she'll forget to haunt you. Why did you put me in with her? I never liked the old sour-faced busybody. Same to you, big nose. There, give her some treasure. The dead are happy if they are buried with some of their precious possessions. Women could be buried with jewelry like dress fasteners. A man might be buried with a sword or throwing spear. He's bound to be a dead shot. Bit of a health hazard, that. Yeah, maybe we should have buried it lying down. 5. Burn crops. Garlic keeps vampires away, they say, and the Saxons believed burning crops kept ghosts away. Do not try this with your breakfast cornflakes, especially after your mom spilled milk over them. This useful trick was banned by Baron Archbishop Theodore in AD 672. Why waste worthwhile wheat when we want wickedness withdrawn? It's just as well the Saxons had these ghost-busting ideas because there were a lot of dead people around. Half of them were dead before they reached 25 years old, not many of the rest reached 30. Good God. When the Saxons first came to Britain, they were pagans. They worshipped German gods like... Name? 2. Days to remember? Tuesday, named after him. Top job? God of justice. Foul fact? He allowed himself to be used as a bait to trap a monstrous wolf. The wolf bit his hand off. Don't try this at home. Maybe he should also be the god of stupidity. Name? Woden. Day to remember? Wednesday, named after him. Top job? The top god and god of poets. Foul fact? He owned an 8-legged horse. Must have cost a fortune in horseshoes that could fly through the air. He swapped one of his eyes for wisdom. Don't try this at school. Name? Thuner. Day to remember? Thursday named after him. Top job? God of thunder. Foul fact? Had a magic throwing hammer that came back to him like a boomerang. Don't try this in the park. Incredibly strong, but has so far failed to smash the skull of the serpent of evil. He'll do it at Ragnarok. That's the end of the worlds of gods and humans. Name Frigg. Day to remember? Friday, named after her. Top job? Woden's wife, goddess of marriage. Foul fact? She didn't lose an eye or a hand, but she did lose her son, Balder, who was killed with the only thing that could harm him, mistletoe. So that's what you stand under next Christmas. Although the Saxons later converted to being Christians, they kept bits of their old religion in their religious ceremonies. They were a mixture of Christian and pagan. Maybe they believed the Christian god and the pagan gods would work together for better effect. Foul fields. Do you have a field that has been cursed? Maybe a school football field where you always seem to lose? Why not get your head teacher to try this ancient Saxon cure? First, cut 4 squares of turf from each corner of the field. Watch out for those worms. Mix oil, honey, yeast, milk, sawdust, and holy water. Then sprinkle the mixture onto the underside of the turf. Give those worms a bath. Send for your priest, who must make 4 crosses from poplar wood. There are a couple of lolly sticks may do the trick. Write a name on each. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Place the crosses in the holes left where you remove the turf and hope the worms aren't too cross. The priest must then bow 9 times to the east and turn 9 times clockwise before putting the turfs back. Bet the worms are glad to be home. All together, chant this spell. Urs, 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 Mother of Earth, may the Almighty Eternal Lord grant thee fields growing and springing, fruitful and strength-giving. If all that doesn't make you win, you could always try an ancient pagan practice and sacrifice the referee. Did you know, even though the historian St. Betty was a good Christian and believed in the power of God, he also believed a lot of the superstitions of the Saxon people, and so did most of the Christians who lived at that time. He believed that God sent messages to people on earth through his miracles, and also through strange signs. In the year 729, Bede reported that there were 2 comets seen in the skies. He said this was a heavenly sign that a disaster was going to happen. In fact, an army from Asia attacked France and caused a lot of death and destruction to Christians there. In 734, there were reports that the moon turned the color of blood and blood rained down from the skies. Shortly afterwards, Bed died. This is a bad sign. York this way, or maybe this way. What other ideas did the Saxons have? Wacky weather wisdom. The Saxons dashed out for signs for their weather forecasts, but signs didn't just foretell the weather. What did these signs mean? Sign, thunder on a Sunday means... 1. Thunder on a Sunday means A. Gale-fierce winds will follow, B. calm weather will follow, C. the death of nuns and monks, D. there will be a storm, or E. the death of lazy women. 2. Dolphins leaping from the water means, 3. thunder on a Wednesday means, 4. red sky at night means, and 5. splashes from earth glittering on a night voyage means. Answers 1C, 2A, 3E, 4B, and 5D. Set in who? In 1939, some archaeologists began digging into a Saxon burial mound. It was at a place called Sutton Hoo, not far from the town of Ipswich in East Anglia, and the site turned out to be a great discovery. But 60 years later, no one can quite agree what they uncovered. It was a 24-meter wooden ship from around the year AD 600, buried with treasure in memory of a great person. There were over 30 gold items and a great silver dish. Most historians agree on that, but not much else. For example, there was an iron stand found in the grave. They argue it was either a torch holder, a standard, sort of a flagpole for soldiers to follow, or a rack to show off the scalps of dead enemies. Has anyone seen my spear frame? But that's not all historians disagree about. A king was buried here. No one is buried here. This is just a memorial. He died in battle, and he's buried somewhere else. Here's a body, but it has been eaten away in the acid soil. There are traces of phosphate in the soil. That must be from rotting bone. No, that could be from an ivory chest set put in a ship. Of course he was a pagan, because he was buried with his riches and coins to pay the crew of his ghostly ship. No, he was a Christian, because there are christening spoons in all the boat, and crosses marked on some silver plates. Anyway, he must have been an important king, though it could have been some relation of a king. Here lies the last king of the Wolfengas who ruled here, King Edmund, a saint murdered by the Vikings, died AD 870. Edmund is buried at Bury St. Edmund, dummy. This is a memorial to the great king, Raedwald, died AD 625. Isn't, is. Was there ever a body in the boat? Archaeologists and scientists looked at soil samples and grave goods for 30 years and couldn't agree. Then, in 1979, they decided to look at the notes made by the first diggers, and they made an amazing discovery. There in the notes was one line no one had noticed before, a complete set of iron coffin fittings arranged in a rectangle. There had been a coffin after all, so it's pretty certain